Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to this week's Weekly D. And this week, I have my good friend Anna Maria Borsga, who is the owner of Delia Studio Rosenheim in Germany. She is, as far as we're aware, the only female pole dancer to have summited the Mount Everest. And I wanted to talk to her about it after seeing how she'd been dealing with online hate just for climbing the mountain. I wanted to know why, and I wanted to know a little bit more about her journey to the top of the biggest mountain in the world. So without further ado, this is the Weekly D. Because honey, if you ain't getting your D on the daily, you better at least be getting it once on the weekly. Weekly D. If you're not getting any and you want some tea, then come and join Dan up on the Weekly D. So, please welcome everybody, Anna Maria Borsga. Thank you so much for joining me. Am I saying that right, by the way? Your last name, did I say
it
correct?
You are saying it right, yes. I assume it's Anna Maria Borsga, thank you.
I was going to say, in the UK accent, we're like Borsga, but when you say it, it sounds so much prettier, Borsga. But yeah, thank you.
I mean, yeah, it's a Romanian name, so it's a little bit hard.
Right, yeah. Oh, actually, you just remind me again about another thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I will remember to come back to that in a minute. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast. We've known each other
a long time. Thank you so much for inviting me.
No worries. Well, we've known each other a very long time. We've taught a pole camps before. I've taught your studio before. And we have a very similar sense of humor, which is why I've always gone so well with you. You're my favorite bitch. I absolutely love you.
Stop.
I love how for us, that's like such a compliment, isn't it? You're like, oh, you're such a bitch. We're like, really? Stop it.
Thank you.
You're so kind. But yeah, so it's so nice to have you on and talk to you. I feel like I haven't seen you forever. So it's nice to be able to kind of even just virtually see you is really nice. So yeah. Tell us,
same for me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself so that anyone at home who doesn't know who Anna Maria is, tell them a little bit about you, tell them about your studio, what you've done, and let's get going.
So I am originally from Romania, actually. I was born in Romania. I moved like 15 years ago. I went to Italy where I discovered pole dance. I did classes like everybody else once a week. I got like really hyped up, because it was like something that I was good at. I was not sexy, but I think I was pretty strong at the beginning. And then I moved to Germany 10 years ago and I opened a studio which runs since like 8 years now. And I'm really proud to say that it's fully booked since 8 years. So it's running really, really good. And in the meantime, I discovered a style of my own. Like I'm well known for flow. I don't do so much tricks like you do on static or flips. So yeah, it's spinning pole is my
thing.
Well,
you can do them. It's just you refuse to do them.
I can do them. Yeah, I can.
I know that because I've taught you many a time. You can do them. You just refuse to do them.
True.
So
I like spinning pole
better.
So why
Germany? Why Germany?
Oh God, you're putting me in an awkward situation because love. I met somebody. I met somebody and yeah, it was for love. I moved to Germany for love. We are not together anymore, but the love for Germany stayed.
Yeah. So where you are in Germany is kind of, so you're in Rosenheim, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So the city is called the town. It's not even a city. It's called Rosenheim and it's about 50 kilometers away from Munich.
Are you near to like a border of another country? Why does that feel like it's really close to another country as well where you are, or is that somewhere else?
It's very close to Austria. Close to Austria. Yes, we are on the border.
Right. Yeah.
A few kilometers.
Because I remember thinking like when I went there, I was like, oh, this is like really close to a border or something, and I couldn't remember where it was. So yeah, it must have been Austria.
It's Austria. Yeah.
And could you ever see yourself going back to Romania?
Well, honestly, I'm right now in Romania because I'm visiting my parents. No, I could not. It's like people here are very nice or very kind, but they have a different mentality and a different type of education. And I would feel that I'm going back in time a little bit. I could not live in
Right.
Romania again.
It's just, oh, so it feels like you're going back in time when you go back there.
Yeah,
So they're just a bit
totally.
behind in Romania. Is that what it is? It's just behind with the times.
Feel like Romania is mostly countryside. Like if you are in the city, like if you're in the big city, of course you see modern life and they have a lot of restaurants and people are getting another type of education. But if I'm going to the countryside, they are pretty much far behind. And yeah, I could not.
So what did childhood life look like for Anna Maria in Romania?
It was actually a lot of fun. this is funny because when I tell about my childhood to other people in Germany, they laugh about it and they say it's not real. But I was beaten up as I grow. Like my parents used to beat me with a belt, and it was something normal. It's something normal. It's not something that did not leave scars or I'm not traumatized because of this. It was just on a daily basis that I got beaten. If I do something bad, my father used to beat me with a
It's I know exactly what you're saying. Like when I was a kid, I used to get spanked too, like all the time. Like if I did something naughty, my dad would
right?
hit me. Like he would. Like, don't be wrong, he wouldn't beat the shit out of me, but like, you know, he'd smack me on the bum, like and tell me off. Too freaking right.
Exactly, but now you cannot spank the kids anymore because you go to prison. It's like forbidden.
Yeah.
But yeah, for us it was normal.
It's
It's something that we grow up with.
It is so hard because I, you know, and for anyone listening to this that was obviously traumatized by those experiences as a child, obviously, you know, it's so, that's a really hard subject, isn't it? Because I say to friends sometimes, I'm like, I feel like the kids behave the way they do now because discipline is so different now than what it was back then. But
Right?
then I just wish there'd also been another way that they could have done it without having to smack the shit out of us. But yeah, it's funny, like back then, like some of the things the kids do now, I hear kids speak to their parents now and I think, oh my God, my
It's
dad would have smacked me
crazy.
in the middle of the street if I'd spoke to people like
Exactly. Same. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm just gonna say, because I know someone will come for me on this, like, it does make it right. And obviously, like, if my dad did that now, oh my God, like, well, it'd be very weird if he did it now because I'm 35 years old. You know, of course, parents would never do that now. But, you know, it's,
Could be a little bit stricter. I think that a lot of parents, they are very, I don't know the word in English, but permissive. I don't really know the word in English, but they allow kids to do whatever they want. Like they should be a little bit stricter, like not spanking them on a daily
Right.
basis, but have some
I feel like
borders.
it's almost gone a bit too far the other way. It's almost like they have no
Yeah.
restrictions whatsoever.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
it's a real difficult one, isn't it? I think, you know, there's trying to make sure there's consequences for actions without causing like so much trauma.
For us it's easy to talk because we don't have children, so we don't know
Exactly.
actually
That's actually
how
really
hard it
important to
is
know
to
because we don't know.
educate
And you know what?
them.
It's funny as well. Like I've had so many experiences recently where people have been talking to me about kids, and I say to them, I'm like, I've got three dogs and I find that hard. I can only imagine what it's like with three children. I literally just talked to someone the other day. She's got five kids. And I said to her, I was like, you are like superhuman to me. Like
A
wow. Like what a
hero.
hero. Amazing. But obviously you make it work, don't you? But like crazy woman, like she is just an inspiration. Like, and there's me. I'm like, oh, three dogs is so much work. I know.
Exhausting.
But so, what age did you leave Romania?
Oh, Dan, it's because I fell in love.
But what age? Well, how old were you?
I was 20 years old. Actually, I had a boyfriend. He was Romanian, but he was living in Italy. Now it sounds so bad because I moved from Romania to Italy because of a guy, and then I moved to
And then you
Germany
move from
because
Italy.
of the
So basically, what we're establishing
You
here is that
are making me
you'll go
feel
to extreme lengths for dick, basically.
You're making me look very bad right now.
Listen, you're making yourself look bad here. That's all I can say.
I should have lied. Well, yeah, I found
in
love.
Yeah, you should have been like, you should have told everyone that you moved there because there were so many good opportunities in Germany.
There were so many good opportunities in Italy, actually, because I moved to Italy from Romania. There were job opportunities and I felt like I cannot grow enough in Romania, so I went to Italy.
So where you are in Romania, do they have Pole Studios where you live, where your family live?
No, they had no Pole Studio. And actually, it's very funny because now Romania is starting to grow from this point of view. And I actually had a workshop yesterday to a Pole Studio and I had some privates. And it was so exciting for me to come back and teach in Romania. I loved
That's
it.
That's awesome.
And they told me, like the girls told me that there are three studios now in this city. It's Cluj-Napoca is like the third biggest city of Romania. And there are some mm-hmm. other studios in Bucharest, which is the capital, and some other big cities. So it's growing, definitely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How cool for you to be able to go back to like your hometown and teach workshops and
stuff.
Oh
my God,
That's
it was
awesome.
Amazing. You know what was the hardest part? Because it's not that I don't speak Romanian anymore. I speak perfectly Romanian, but I'm not used to teach in this language because I teach only in English or I teach in German. And there are certain expressions that are coming natural to me in another language. And in Romanian, that is actually my language. And of course, I can speak Romanian, but I just could not express myself. I could not express what I want to say. It was so frustrating. And I had to apologize all the time. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's so embarrassing, actually.
No, well, it's completely different if you've never taught in, like, because pole is so specific to body parts and stuff and exactly
right,
the type of
exactly.
movements we want them to do. So to
exactly.
teach, especially when you would never have used those words in
exactly.
like that country
and
when
I felt
you were
that
there.
They don't fit, like the words in Romanian don't fit with what I want to say. But
right.
yeah.
Oh, that's cool though. So how many languages do you speak? Does that mean you speak English, German, Romanian and Italian or no Italian?
Exactly. I speak perfectly all four languages fluently.
That's
and
crazy.
Now I'm studying Spanish.
You're learning Spanish now?
Yes. Yes,
you,
I'm
you
studying
found
Spanish
a, you
right
found
now.
A man there. You're going to move there too?
Not yet, but who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
I remember one time when I was in Italy, I did like list with things that would make me happy because I was so into manifestation and attracting good things in your life. And I wrote on a note, like I had nothing to do with Germany at that point. And I wrote on my list that I want to talk German. I want to speak fluently German. 1 year later, I was moving to Germany with a German guy and now I'm speaking fluently German.
Wow,
so it
that's
works.
Crazy. Yeah, I mean, what's your... And whilst we're on that subject, actually, what's your vibe with like manifestation and stuff? Are you still quite into that?
I'm very into that. I'm like so strong. I'm a visionary. I like to visualize my goals. I like to write them down. I like to think a lot about them. For example, if we're taking the Everest right now, mm-hmm. I used to have the picture of Everest as my screensaver on the computer, as my... screensaver, how
yeah.
it's called
mm-hmm.
on the phone also. And I used to watch it every day. I used to run 10 kilometers at the gym. I used to put the phone in front of me, only watching the picture of Everest and imagining myself running towards that goal.
That's so cool.
So yeah, it was like really amazing because I gave myself 5 years to do this, to reach the goal, to climb Everest. And I did it like in 5 months.
That's
5 months later, I was already on top.
Crazy. Oh my God, that's so crazy. So, well, let's get straight into this because I have so many questions about Everest. So after you did the Everest summit, and so I don't know if you know the answer to this. Are you the first pole dancer to summit Everest?
Well, I don't know if I'm the first pole dancer because, of course, I don't know what hobbies other people have. Mm-hmm. But definitely I was the first person to do a split on Everest. I'm totally sure because it was so fucking, can I say fucking?
Yeah, you can say fucking. Yeah.
It was so fucking hard to open my legs there. I'm totally sure nobody did it before.
Right. Oh, because obviously it's so cold at the top that everyone's so wrapped up, right?
It's crazy. It's crazy, but also because of the gear, because of the clothes that you're wearing, because of the summit suit and everything, and because it's very dangerous also. Like, literally, I felt that I'm rolling down if I hold this blade.
Wow. Oh my God, that's nuts. So let's start from the beginning. What if someone was wanting to summit Everest? I was under the impression that anyone could just do it. I didn't even know it was like this big thing.
Oh my God, you're like the first one, because when I first said that I want to climb Everest, everybody was, "Are you crazy? This is impossible.
I
Like,
didn't
it's
know.
nobody can do
I didn't know. So I
it."
didn't even know how like hard it was to sustain life at the top. Like when you get up there, you literally can only be there for a moment. You have to come straight back down because it's so high.
Exactly,
I didn't know this.
yeah.
Like these are little things that I was so, and then when I saw that you had done it, and I saw all the, we'll talk about that, all the drama and stuff on your page and you know, all the things people were saying, I was like, huh. And then I saw then something, I think because I've been talking to you about it, an advert then came up for this program about a guy who is a, we have a show here called The Only Way is, Ch no, not The Only Way is Chelsea. What's it called? Made in Chelsea, it's called. And it's about people who live in Chelsea in London. They're basically super, super rich. And basically, one of the guys on there, he wanted to go to Everest to find his brother because his brother never came back. So he did,
Oh, right, they did the
they
documentation
did the
about this,
documentary
right?
about it. Yeah. So it was called
Yeah, right.
Finding and his name. I can't remember the guy's name.
Exactly, Finding
Yes,
Michael,
that's
it
it. Oh,
was.
you've seen
It was
it?
actually with, yes, I've seen it. It was actually with the same, how it's called, with the same company that I was climbing. They searched it with the same company that I was
Oh, I
climbing with.
see. Okay. So they were going to try. They didn't find him, sadly, but they did manage to reconnect. There was a family, like a local family, and I think one of the Sherpas had died or something. Oh, that
Exactly,
was so
yeah,
nice.
exactly.
It's honestly,
That
for
was so
anyone who is
nice.
listening to this now, it was called Finding Michael, was it called? Go
Finding
and look
Michael,
up. It was
yes.
on Netflix, I think. Finding Michael. Beautiful.
I think it's on
I was on,
Disney, actually.
yes,
I
no, I think
don't
you're
know.
right. It is on Disney. Because I
It's
remember
on
thinking, like,
Disney.
this is weird. So, yeah, go and look it up. Finding Michael, it was so, it made me emotional, like, parts of it. I was so emotional because it was just so, like, I learned so much stuff about the, like, summit journey and how hard it is and how many, I know it sounds terrible, but how many
Right.
bodies are on that mountain?
There are so many bodies, and people don't understand because, it's the human factor where you think, how could you leave a body there? But the truth is, nobody can take them. Like, first of all, if you find them, that body is weighing, it has a weight like 200 kilograms because it's iced. So you cannot, as a human alone, you cannot take it down. You need a team. Nobody risks their lives to go up and to bring a body down. The helicopters, depending of course on what altitude you are, but the helicopters don't reach that altitude. So nobody risks their life to go with a helicopter and
Because I was
take
going
the
to ask
bodies.
you, because this is something they didn't mention on the documentary, actually. I was going to ask about, like, you know, why don't they just send a big helicopter up just to collect them all, just to get them all back?
It's because the air is so thin there, and the helicopter don't fly well on the thin air. So the helicopters are reaching Camp 2, which is 6,400 meters, and barely they reach this barely. So if there is an emergency, you can be taken away from Camp 2. It would not be preferable to be taken with a helicopter. But if you're at Camp 3, for example, no helicopter will reach you. You will have to go down. And also, there is not a helipad. There is no way to land a helicopter there because Everest is like basically is a vertical wall. So until Camp 2, there is a point where they can reach. From there up, there's no point
So how many
anymore.
camps are there? So let's again, just for anyone listening to this, I think it's so important because I know what you mean because I've watched that documentary. Hey, what's up, everyone? So sorry to interrupt your episode. I just wanted to come on really quickly and tell you a little bit about pololz.com. Did you know that we offer international shipping? Well, we've always offered international shipping, but now we're offering it at a much more reasonable price because shipping from the UK is crazy expensive. So we had to do something about it. So now you can get all of our awesome designs shipped to your home at a much more reasonable price. So why don't you go and check out polelols.com today? Because if you want a t-shirt that's got a picture of some pole dancing cats on, maybe some pole dancing dogs, maybe you want a t-shirt that says heels bigger than your dick on it, there's something for everyone. So go and check out polelols.com today. Let's get back to the episode. So when you start pretty much from like right at the bottom. There's a camp where everyone kind of like it's basically like a mini home, isn't it? Where you guys stay for the night before you then travel the next day and you climb up to the next camp, whatever. How long? So camp one is literally at the bottom of the mountain in the town center, is it all? Okay.
No, base camp is at the bottom of the mountain. So in the base camp, we are waiting. I spent 2 months in the base camp in a tent, actually. It's like a small town. There are so many tents from so many different companies. And we have like big tents, like the dinner tents or a coffee tent where people are gathering and talking with each other. The internet is crap there. Like I paid 50 euros for 2 days of internet in which I could not even send a video home because it's like impossible. It's horrible. And after base camp, so basically you're waiting for a weather window to climb Everest. So it's the whole April where people are climbing and everybody's waiting for that window where is no wind, where is no storm, where is no snow, where everything is perfect. So you are going from base camp to camp one, sleep one night, then you're going to camp two, sleep one night, then you're going to touch camp three if possible and coming back to camp two, sleep one night, and then you're going down again. And this is called an acclimatization tour. So to be able to breathe at that altitude, to be able to use your, to, use your body at that altitude. So you have to do an acclimatization tour. And after that, you're waiting for a second weather window to push for the summit. And it's called exactly
like so camp three is the last camp point. That's the last one.
Camp four is the last camp. And camp four, you're only touching it when you do the summit push. So at camp three, for the summit push, you do again the same round. So you're going from base camp actually directly to camp two over the Khumbu Icefall, which is the most dangerous part of Everest, they say. I did not consider it the most dangerous. I think that the summit is way more dangerous, but points of view. From camp two, you're going to camp three, you're going to sleep one night. And this is where they give you for the first time oxygen. So you're going to sleep with oxygen. And from camp three, you go to camp four, you are not allowed to spend the night there. You're allowed to sleep for a few hours.
Why?
If you can. I could not sleep there. And then you're, because of the altitude, because camp four is at the border with 8,000 meters, at 8,000 meter, and our body is not made to survive at 8,000 meter. So if you're going to spend one or a few nights at camp four, it's like, the chances that you're going really crazy, it's they are very high. So I don't remember exactly what's the name of
like what happens to your body. There's something
like if your body loses oxygen, like you cannot think straight anymore, you don't understand what's happening around you, and you put yourself in a difficult situation, and of course everybody around you. Like there was a person who, one of our member teams, who spent 3 nights at camp four, and they were telling us about how he went crazy and he shot stuff around the tent and he did not want it to go out anymore, and he said he's weak and he doesn't want to do this anymore, but he doesn't want to go back, and he just went crazy and nobody could talk with him
anymore.
Did
he summit in
the
end
or
no?
Low oxygen in his body. Did he summit? Yes, he summited. It was amazing. I could not believe that he summited. So he spent 3 nights at camp four. He summited, but he was supposed to do two mountains, because next to Everest is another mountain called Lhotse, And there are a lot of people who are booking these two mountains together.
But he summited at least the main one, I guess. You've done Everest, it's pretty nuts.
Yes, at least the main one.
Crazy.
Exactly.
Oh my God. So you just didn't realize that. And also these base camps, they're not even really like, they're basically tents. They're glorified tents, right?
Exactly. It depends a little bit, you know, this is also a thing for which I got a lot of hate or let's say attention online, because there are different packages that you can book to climb Everest. So there are the basic packages. I think they are like around a basic package around 20,000 to 30,000
did you say?
To climb Everest. And the,
for basic
20,000 to 30,000 euros, yes. But this is just to climb. Like, it's without the gear, it's without the flights, it's without the helicopter, without the hotels, without anything else. Like, just to climb Everest, just the permission to climb Everest, or to do it with a company. And there are these companies who are charging a little bit more, like my company, because I did it with Elite Exped, it's called. And it's very well known because it's run by Nims Dye. And Nims Dye is this guy who broke the world record. He did the fastest, the fastest time, the all 14 peaks over 8,000 meters. And they did a documentary on Netflix. And he's huge, like in the mountaineering world, that he's really huge right now. And this is the reason why, of course, they charge more. So I paid 50K for... to climb Everest. And there are other packages, there are the VIP packages who are paying 200K or who are paying, actually there was a woman who was paying 1 million euros to climb one-on-one with Nims Dye. So there are different packages, and at the base camp, there are also different tents. So for my package, 50K, which was basic, I had a basic beach tent, like with nothing inside, but still it was enough space. It was like pretty big. And I went to see the VIP tents, and they actually, you go inside and they have a bed, they have an electric blanket, they even have a couch, God damn it. They had a couch inside. I mean, it's still cold, but it's like a small room, you know, and you can still use an electric blanket that it only works for two hours a day, does not work the whole night, but still you have it. And it's different. Yeah. I slept in a sleeping bag. Like, I did not have a bed.
Actually, because obviously this is like, you could put a price on anything, can't you? Like, even to climb to the top of a mountain, they're like, oh, we have a premium package.
You can really put a, yes, yes. Exactly. And this is why people are so aggressive actually online, because they say, yeah, everyone with money can do it, and they give you all the comfort, and this is not mountaineering. And I get this point, like I really understand the point, because I saw also the difference between a basic package and the VIP package. And they also have like, they went to camp two and then they decided to come back with a helicopter to don't do the whole trek by foot. And I found it also unfair, like, please, if you climb Everest, let's do it by our own feet. Don't cheat. So I get it. But at the end of the day, there are so many people who are investing everything they have to get there and everything they have just to reach the summit.
But why do you think they do it? Why do you think they're so determined to... Because I have to say, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm super proud of you for doing it. And I think it's amazing that you did it. But I have to say, personally, I have no inclination to want to do it at all, actually. I didn't look at you doing it and think, I have to do that. I thought, wow, go her, like, she's amazing. But I watched that documentary and I thought, why would anyone want to do that? It looks so scary.
It's because if you're not into it, like, you don't know what it's about. All people there are mountaineering. They are doing this, like, they're... whole life, and they are very passionate about it, and climbing Everest is like the peak of their mountaineering life, so it's a thing that you must do. From my point of view,
it's like a bucket list thing.
Exactly, it's like a bucket list thing. And I did it because I watched a documentary also on Netflix. It was about the earthquake in Nepal, and it was in 2015. And they were describing this area, which it was not even the base camp, it was another trek. It's called Annapurna Trek. And they were describing it so beautifully. And I was like, oh my God, it must be so beautiful there. I want to visit Nepal. And then another thought came to me, but if I go to Nepal, I want to see the base camp, like I want to see Everest. And then another thought came to me, but if I go to the base camp, I might as well climb Everest. And I told this to a friend of mine with whom I go on trekking sometimes. Like, I've never been higher than 1,500 meters, like just trekking. And I wrote him and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if you would do Everest together? Let's do it. I know it's possible. And he responded to me in such a mean way. He was like, so, what do you think that Everest cares about your pretty face and your pretty nails, and you're so ignorant. It's not possible to do this. You will never be capable to do this. It's something that mountaineering people are doing, not you, because you with your Instagram videos. And it hit me so hard. I was like, this is what you think about me, that I'm just like a pussy with high heels and pretty painted nails, and I cannot do something. I will show you that I will climb Everest. I will climb it
Oh
without you.
my
And it
God.
was like so strong in my mind. If he doesn't believe in me, and probably nobody believes in me, and there are so many people in this world that don't believe in themselves and in what they are capable to do, and they let themselves discourage by other people, I wanted to be inspirational, and I wanted to show these people that if you set something, if you set in your mind something to do, you can absolutely do it. And I wanted exactly this, to pick a goal that is so big that nobody can say, oh, you are lucky to do it. No, I want to climb Everest. I want to climb the highest peak in the world. And I have no mountaineering experience. And I will show you that if I set my mind on this, I will fucking do it. And I did
And
it.
you did it
And
exactly.
I did it.
And did you have to do like a certain type of training to be able to do it? Like, do they
Well,
say
the
to you
funny
right before
story
you come,
is,
you have to be able to do
yeah,
this?
absolutely. So the funny story is, I did not go to Nepal to climb Everest. Actually, I decided that I want to climb Everest, and I was looking into, okay, what do I have to do next? So they had this package for beginners. It's called Lobuche Peak. So it's a 6,000 meter mountain. Beginner, I mean, in Nepal, is beginner for us is like huge. And I
Wow.
booked that, and I said, okay, I'm going to Nepal. I'm going to do this peak. They have also a training, like they have a 3 days training at the base camp where they show you how to climb on ice, how to go down, how to save people, and a lot of things that you need on the mountain. I had absolutely no idea. I had no equipment. I invested in equipment. I spent like 10K on equipment because I had not even socks, like I had nothing. And I booked my flight and I went to Nepal. Nobody wanted to come with me, so I went alone. I don't care. I want to climb Everest, so I'm going to do this journey. When I reached there, we started to do the so you start from Kathmandu, we fly with a helicopter to a certain point, and from there is trekking to the base camp. And it's about 10 days trekking to the base camp. So I did this, and I did it with the Everest climbers together. So we were the small group from Lobuche, like the beginners, and the Everest together, because everybody's supposed to be at the base camp at the same time. And walking with the climbers from Everest, I was like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. This is my dream. And how did you do it? How did you finance this? And just wanted to know so many details of about people, why do they do it? How do they do it? How do they have the money? It's a lot of money. So I could not even afford it at that point. And when we reached base camp, one of the girls got sick. So she was an Everest climber and she got sick, and she was like, she was an athlete. She was a very, very strong girl. She's amazing, that girl. But because she had such a clean life and clean nutrition, she got sick because of the water.
Oh
So,
no.
oh, it was terrible.
Oh, bless her.
And when we reached the base camp, there were a lot of avalanches. Like you can see them left and right, and you can hear in the night the mountain moving. And it's so scary to stay alone in your tent and hear the avalanche coming. And she got scared and she was like, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to do Everest. I don't think it's a good time for me. I don't think it's a good idea. And she asked me, Anna, look, I heard that you're so interesting about this and you're so passionate and you want to climb Everest. How about you take my place? And I was like, geez, I mean, it's a huge opportunity, but first of all, I don't have the money. Second of all, I don't have the preparation. I don't have any type of experience. I don't have the mental preparation, the physical preparation. Like I run a few times 10K just to train for Lobuchepik, but more than that, I did nothing. And she was like, don't worry about it. Let's talk with NIMSDAI. Let's talk with the companies. Let's see if it's possible. And for the money, I trust you. You're going to climb. Then we're going to do it on credit. Like you will pay me monthly a certain amount of money until you finish your credit. And it doesn't matter. It can be a year, it can be longer, whatever you need. It was like, wow, such an opportunity.
Wow.
When do
Oh my
I get
God.
such an
What a
opportunity?
lovely
Like to climb
person.
Everest for
Are you
free.
still in
It was
contact?
like, yeah,
Yes.
yeah.
Does she want to go back and do it, or is she no?
She actually wanted to, she even changed her mind right after and then changed her mind again. And then she said she will go next year. And she's not sure if Everest or she will start, she was with her man, or they will start with smaller mountains. But she said at that time she wasn't feeling it.
That's
So she really
you got to
wanted,
listen
but
to your body, haven't
it was
you?
just a
Yeah,
feeling.
exactly. You got to listen to your
Exactly. You gotta
gut.
listen.
So you took her
And for me
space.
was, oh my God, what should I do? Should I take it? Should I don't take it? And I start crying and I start panicking. It's such a big opportunity. Like the universe is giving me this, what I was asking, like perfectly on the plate. How can I not take it? When will I have this opportunity? And then I start thinking, how do I do with the studio? I have to close the studio. I don't even have internet to let everybody know, to organize everything. And I was like, fuck, you know what? I want this so badly. I don't care, whatever it takes. I'm going to do it. So I took the decision. I'm going to go and climb. And then everything else just arranged from itself. Like I wrote my boyfriend, I'm going to close the studio. Please handle this. I wrote the girls. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I really want to climb Everest. I'm going to stay to Nepal another month. So I stayed 2 months in total. The studio is closed. I will fix everything when I'm coming back.
So,
Like, I don't care.
out
Close my eyes
of interest though, why did
and
you
do
close the
it.
studio? Why didn't you just get one of the instructors to like get over whilst you were away? Do you know what I mean? Just like run everything for you.
Well, I run the studio alone since 7 years, and it's only this year that I have an instructor.
God.
And my girl, the instructor, only does exactly what I tell her. So I gave it to her, the program, for 1 month. I didn't give it to her further. And it was so complicated for me to explain her by message what she has to do with each group. I have 200 students. It's crazy. It's a lot of classes. And not everybody is willing to do so many classes. Like I do it for myself because it's my studio and I have a different type of motivation. But maybe she's not willing to take three, four classes a day every day for
Sure.
2 months. It's a lot of
Yeah.
work. So I just say for me, it's easier just to close it and I will handle
How long
everything
is the studio
later.
closed for while she tries to do the summit?
One
Ah,
month.
okay.
Yeah, 1 month it was closed, and it was actually 1 month she did the classes, the time that I was supposed to do the peak, the Lobuchepik. So I organized everything for 1 month, and when I decided that I will stay another month for Everest, I was like,
Yeah.
no, I'm closing it. And it was like a very bad period because I expanded the studio, so I opened a second room, and it was open exactly in that time, so I had to pay for two rooms, but none of them
Of
was
course.
working.
Well.
But it's about how much you want something. And I really, really wanted Everest more than anything else. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care how much money I lose. I will
I
do
assume
this.
you're still, so you're still pa just paying it back now, or did you manage to pay it back?
Oh, jeez, I'm paying so much
Oh,
right
bless
now.
you.
I'm paying so much right
That's
now.
okay,
Yeah.
though.
Yeah, I'm paying we established like 3,500 dollars a month. Yeah,
Wow.
every
Oh
month.
gosh, a lot of money. But what an
It's a lot
experience.
of
So
money.
what like so when you got to the top, tell us, because you lost your phone, didn't you? You ended up dropping your phone. Tell us about
Yes.
that. You did manage to get a picture though of
It
you,
was
didn't you? Because
horrible.
someone else took a
I
photo
did
and you
manage to
were in
get
the
a picture.
background,
I'm there. I was there.
weren't
I also have the certificate. I
you?
can prove I was on Everest. Yeah. But goddamn, I lost my phone. So basically, they sent me with a Sherpa. This guy, it was 19 years old. So basically, a kid, which I was not very happy about it, you know, because I'm a beginner. You send me with a kid on top of Everest, like we are two lost souls there. And it was exactly like this. And they told me, yeah, but he's a really strong kid because he was supposed to carry the oxygen bottles. So I'm carrying my oxygen bottles and he's carrying the ones that we need. So another three or four he carried, and they're very, very heavy. And I said, yeah, it's true, he's very strong, I know, but he doesn't carry me on the top. So if we have a problem, he will not know how to manage it because he doesn't have the experience. He's strong, but he doesn't have the experience. He cannot carry me down, he cannot carry me up, so I don't care. Anyway, I was with this kid. He did not have a phone. He did not have a watch. He could not speak English. Like, his English was pretty bad, basic, let's say basic. And we climbed to the top and we had an amazing lucky time because I don't know if you're familiar with a lot of people are climbing Everest in the same weather window. That means you have like 2 or 3 days of sun. There are like 500 people who are climbing, and all these 500 people are climbing on the same rope. So it's like really a line of people that is never ending, and this is the most dangerous because you're spending so much time on the high altitude, the oxygen runs out and you have to go back. You spend your money and you did not climb Everest. On the day that we were climbing, there was nobody on the mountain. Like, we were alone on the whole mountain. It was
Wow.
crazy. And we went, it took like from camp four, because we went to camp four, we got to rest for a few hours. And then we went further to the summit. And from camp four to the summit, there are about 12, 13 hours it took.
Wait, from Camp
And
Four,
at
it
the
takes
summit,
12 to
they.
13 hours to get to the summit.
Yes. And then to come back down, it was like 23 hours in total. It was a 23-hour day where you did not eat, you did not rest, you barely drink because you cannot drink. You don't take stops to drink because you have also the oxygen mask, and it's really complicated to take your gloves down, to take your helmet down, to take your mask down, to drink a little bit of water that is anyway cold, and then to put
Oh my
everything.
God.
So, no sleep, no eat,
For 24
no
hours, sorry,
drink.
how many hours was it again?
For 24 hours, yeah, 23 hours it took for camp four till the top. Then from the top, we had to go back directly to camp two. We were not allowed to
Oh, I
stop.
see. Because you had to go past. Oh, so to go from Camp 4 up and then down to Camp 4 wouldn't have taken 23 hours.
It would have to, it was like, let me think, 12. Around 16 hours it was from camp
Mate.
four back to camp four, around 16
Oof.
hours. Yeah, it was
Wow.
terrible. It was
Your
probably the
feet
worst day
must
of my life.
look a
It was
mess.
horrible.
Your
It was
feet must be in
horrible.
so much pain. And how,
So much pain.
be honest with me, like how fast are you kind of walking this? Like, are you, is it
The
like a,
slowest. The
okay.
slowest, like
So
every
this is
step
why it
is
takes
like
so long.
step, 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 like the
Okay,
slowest.
I see. So this is why it takes so many hours, because you're walking
Yes,
at a very slow
you're
pace.
walking
Okay.
very slow, you're on the rope, you're jummering, like you basically pull yourself on the rope the whole freaking time, the whole 12 hours,
Oh
you're
my God.
pulling. This is why pole dance was a very good training for that.
So, but
So
getting
I was
down
pulling
then,
and pulling and pulling.
getting
And
down must be, oh
getting
my God.
down, it's easier from a physical point of view, but at the summit, like literally from the summit till I don't know, like 200, 300 meters down, it was horrible. It was so hard. You have to go over the rocks. It's called a Hillary step, and you have the crampons, the ice crampons. Are they called crampons in English? I'm
I
not
don't think
sure.
so.
Like the shoes with the for the ice, the
With the spikes on them and stuff.
yeah, exactly.
I
I'm
don't know
not
what
sure
they're
how
called.
they're
Yeah, I don't know
called
what they're
it.
called.
So you have to use them, and there are so many areas where actually it's not snow. There is no snow. There is just rocks, and you're sliding under the rocks. And I had the most horrible experience there, like really the most horrible experience going down, which I'm going to tell you about in a minute. So we went up. There were around four or five people there. Everybody was already there since 20 minutes. So they were doing pictures, they were taking pictures from each other. So when we reached the summit, they went down. When they went down, I took some pictures with my team, with my phone, of course, which went lost. And then I was alone on the summit of Everest. This is like the most amazing thing. I was alone on top of Everest, me and my Sherpa, me and my guide, and it was amazing. And the thing that I really feel sorry about is I did not take it in because I was so tired. I was exhausted. I was like, I just want to do a lot of pictures, a lot of videos to everything, and then I will enjoy them later. Which I did not get to enjoy them because I lost my phone immediately after.
Well,
And
you
this
didn't
is
lose it,
something
did you?
that
He lost it or something.
he lost it. Yeah, he lost it. So
You
we
gave it
took
to him and he put it into his pocket, but he didn't zip it up or something.
exactly because the thing is he did not have a phone. For him was also very important. He was like the second time on Everest. So we did pictures with each other and videos and whatever. And then I said, I want this split picture. So I did a split. He took the picture. The split was shitty. I was not flat on the ground. And I was like, no, I cannot post this on Instagram. Like, it's not Instagram worthy. Let's go a little bit lower. It's still the top of Everest. Who cares? It's still the highest split in the world. Let's go a little bit lower where it's going to be a little bit flatter so I can take another picture in the split. So we went down, we went like 50 meters probably, where we were right under the summit, but the top of Everest is huge, is a huge mountain, only the top. So we were right under. He goes down to take the rope. And the phone was on this pocket, on the chest pocket, which was not zipped because the zipper was frozen. And my phone went down on the mountain and I did not see it. I really did not see it. He turned around and he told me, like, your phone. He had an oxygen mask. His English was bad. I was pissed off because I was so tired and I was like, what? I don't understand you. Your mobile. And what is with my mobile? I lost it. I was like, I turn around, I watched the top, and I was, you forgot it on top of Everest because there's no way I can climb again that mountain. And he was, no, don't worry. It's down on the mountain. And I was like, fuck, are you kidding me? And then I'm looking down the mountain, and exactly in that point, there is a body, a dead body, which is a famous dead body. It's called Green Boots. And I saw the body and which I did not see when I was going up because I was so focused to climb, and I start crying. And his words was like, "Don't cry, he's dead." I know, bitch, but you dropped my phone over him.
Oh
Like, I know he's dead. He was trying to help me, like, "Don't cry, he's dead. He's not alive. I know that."
Oh
And
my God.
because I was crying, my nose starts running. And because my nose started running under the mask, I could not clean it, and the filter of the mask
Oh
froze.
no.
And I was like, I don't have air. And he's checking my oxygen bottle. He's like, but your oxygen is okay. Like, everything is okay. Don't go in panic. Please, we will buy you a new phone. Don't go in panic. And I'm like, my phone, everything. Like, 2 months in Nepal. As more as I cried, as more my filter was frozen. And then, I cannot breathe. And then I start crying even more because I went into panic. Like I don't get oxygen. And he's like, everything is okay. No, let's go down. Let's go down. And we'll talk about the phone later. We cannot recover the phone. It's lost.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, what could I have done? It's like, okay, fuck, it's lost. I'm going to mourn it later. Like I'm going down and I'm going to cry after for my phone. And going down, I keep saying, I don't get air. I swear I don't get air. And because he doesn't have experience, he doesn't know what to do because he did not realize that my filter is frozen. This is a thing that can happen, but it doesn't happen always. So you have to have this experience. So I'm telling him because I did they did a small class with us before about mask and about oxygen bottles. And this is the only thing, useful thing that they told me. Your filter can froze. If it's frozen, you just have to clean it with a finger. Like you don't have to do anything. And I tell him, like, my filter, I think it's frozen. Can you clean it? He doesn't speak English. He doesn't understand what I want. And I'm like, motherfucker, like, hold my gloves. And I'm taking my gloves at minus 40 degrees, keep my gloves, take my helm down, take everything down and clean my filter. And because of this, I'm so angry and I start crying even more. And I cannot see anything with the glasses because we're blurry. It was a horrible trip down. Horrible, horrible. I was crying the whole time. I was sleeping the whole time. I could not see the steps because my glasses were so blurry. And on top of this, after 15 minutes, it starts snowing, like from a beautiful clear weather, everything was white. And it was like the sun was burning because I got the burn on my face, even if everything was like clouded. And I'm watching the top and I see this small snow going down, fresh snow. And I ask him, is the risk of an avalanche? And he's like, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit risky. We should hurry up down. And I'm like, but can we call a helicopter? And then I realized how stupid it is. We are at 8,600 meters. No helicopter will come to pick me up. And I was like, so it hit me. I could die on this mountain. Like, I don't see anything. I cannot breathe. Everything is so heavy. I'm so tired. I can die on this mountain. And I ask him, please, please don't let me down this mountain. Like, I really want to go down. And luckily, it was a smooth way down afterwards. Like, after I lost my phone and calming myself and really reaching this feeling, shit, if I don't calm down, I'm going to die on this mountain. Like, I really have to breathe. Fuck the phone. It doesn't matter.
Well, you say fuck the phone. It's funny because I remember, and, I can't remember which post it was, but when you posted about this, you posted and said to people like, listen, this is the photo I got. It's the background of someone else's photo. It's just, it's all I have because my phone was lost. You know, I'm so sad. I lost. And you said how sad you were to lose your phone. And I think someone had commented something. I can't remember. Or someone said something about, oh, well, you know, you should have just done it for the experience, you know, like, why are you so upset about your phone, blah, blah, blah. But actually, I'm not being funny, but if you spend 50,000 euros on an experience, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity,
exactly,
you took photos, you documented the whole thing, and then someone's lost your phone, you would be upset. I'm sorry, but you would be. It doesn't matter how much you can say, oh, I stood at the top of the mountain.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed the experience. Yeah, but you now can't look back on it, and that's sad, you know? So I totally feel you.
Exactly. I cannot show it to my friends, to my parents. It's not even about social media. I honestly did not do it for social media. I wanted to tell this inspirational story where you can achieve everything. It doesn't have to be Everest, but if you set your mind on something, you can achieve it. And I wanted to tell this story through the videos, through the pictures, through everything. But it was not so much about social media as it was about the story behind it. And I came home and I could not show a picture to my parents. Mm. Hey, here is me on Everest. And it was even very difficult to, because they give you a certificate when you climb Everest, but you have to prove that you've been there. And you have to prove by taking a picture without the mask or a video. So you have to take your mask down so they can see their face. And I did not have a picture without a mask. I only had a picture with the summit. My luck, it was there were some people who recognized me from my team and they could confirm, yes, she was on the summit. So they wrote a letter for me, so I get my certificate. But it's actually a problem not having the pictures. And I still cry about it. Like, honestly, I still cry. It still hurts me that I don't have it. I try to think, yes, the mountain was so good to me. I was a beginner. It allowed me, like, to climb without lines. It allowed me to climb in good weather. It allowed me to go up and come back. And I'm very grateful for this. And the only thing that it took for me was the phone.
It could have taken your life.
I don't know, my fingers.
And you know what, as well?
Or my life, exactly. So it was... it was a small sacrifice, but it still hurts.
People have to see proof of stuff. Why can't we just be happy in the fact that we know we did it? So I don't need to prove to you. I've got a certificate if you want to see a certificate, you know, but you know you did it. And do you know what, when you posted it, just it, again, like I talk about this all the time on this podcast, but how horrible the internet is. It's such a horrible place, you know. So obviously you've got the people who are like, oh, stop worrying about your phone. Then you got the people who are like, oh, this is just rich people like spending. And you know, you're just like,
exactly, like fuck everybody. You don't know how hard it was, like the sacrifice, the pain. I cried so much. And we even had a discussion because I was saying to everybody, I want to do the highest split in the world, which would have been a world record. And Nimstad told me, you know, it's actually possible to even put a pole on the top of Everest if you really want to. Like, we can do this for you. Right now, I cannot.
Can you imagine if you got? Can you imagine if you got to the top and they're like, "Okay, now do a handspring"? You'd be like, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Exactly. Like, oh my god! But then they said to me, if you do these things like associating pole dance with climbing Everest, you have to be aware of the backlash, which I was not aware of. I was like, people will find this amazing. Like, it's an amazing thing. You put a pole on Everest and you do a flag there. What can be more awesome than this? But no, it's not like this. People who are into mountaineering, they don't see this as good things. They are like, oh, she had so much money, she put a pole on Everest, the stripper on the top of Everest, now everybody can reach it. Like, the backlash is real and is horrible and so harsh. And I got a lot of backlash for the videos. I actually had 3 videos on the phone. I posted 3 videos which went crazy viral. And I had to stop the comments because the people were like, yeah, this is people with money. And look, the Sherpa is carrying her bag and she cannot do anything. And I was crossing the letters, ice. Letters over the crevasses. Exactly. It's so hard to do it. And it's so, you know, you have to go really, really slow. And I'm scared of heights, so I had to be extra careful. And of course, I'm uncertain because it was my first time. And you can see in the video that I'm uncertain walking. Oh, what is she doing on Everest? There is not your place there. You don't know what you're doing. You put everybody in danger. Bitch, I don't put anybody in danger. I'm walking slowly exactly because I want to be safe. And, you know, instead of being like happy, oh my God, she did this and she made it. No. Why are you there? Why did you do it? You have too much money. Your share price carrying your stuff.
I just find that that's just a lot of negativity. Like, you could do anything. Like, I've of course not.
You cannot do it right. You cannot do it right.
And people have been like, why are you not raising for this charity? Like, especially with everything that's, I can't remember what it was. Something was happening at the time and I was raising for a charity that was nothing to do with this other cause. And they were like, don't you think you should be raising for this charity? I'm like, listen, bitch, I'm fucking raising for a charity. Be happy that I'm raising anything at all. Like, I'm trying my best here.
Exactly. What are you doing? You're commenting from the fucking couch, watching the commentaries about mountains, and you're telling me how easy it is to climb Everest and how everybody can do it. Yeah, put your backpack on and climb Everest if it's so easy.
I hate people for that. Oh, hey, so sorry to interrupt your podcast. I just wanted to pop in really quickly to tell you about one of our sponsors. And today's podcast is sponsored by Ra Designs. Ra Designs is an activewear brand that create activewear for pole dancers and people doing alternative fitness, aka aerial silks, aerial hoops, straps, you name it, they've got something for you. They've got a women's range. They've got a men's range. Woo! I love men's pole wear because it's so hard to find. And they've also got a whole range for women with curves. Can we talk about women with boobs? It's hard to keep these babies in, I hear, right? Well, Ra have got you covered. They have got a curvy girl range, which is going to keep you feeling supported and looking amazing. So please go and check out our sponsor for today. Thank you so much to Ra. We are so happy to have you on this podcast. Go and check out Ra Designs. Your studio obviously, I guess technically has helped you to be able to afford to pay to do something like this. Like, so building the studio and making it a successful business is really part of the main reason why you were able to do this. What do you think it is about what you do at the studio that made it so successful? Because like you said, you have like waiting lists for classes. It's so popular there. And what do you think it is that you do that's that secret?
I actually got a lot of questions about this online, and my secret is, first of all, working really, really hard, because we all know there are some studios, they're all the studios actually. So I own a studio with more than 200 students, and I did all classes by myself for 7 years, all classes. I did not have trainers.
Oh my God.
So this takes you a huge cost, actually. And I know studios, they are having like 30 or 14 people and they have like eight trainers. Why do you need these trainers for 13 people? Like, you can do the classes by yourself. This is one thing. And the other thing is, I'm very present. I know all the girls. I talk to them. They can write me anytime. I have WhatsApp groups. I'm there, I'm present. They talk with a person. They don't book online. They don't, if they have a problem, they come directly to me and I can fix problems for them. And this is what they make them
Well,
stay.
can I ask? Because see, I think that's amazing. But do you find that that then means that because they have your contact details, because they go straight to you, do you find that that then means that they sometimes feel they can cross that line of being,
Definitely.
do you know that? Yeah, you know when they feel like they can take the piss because they know you. This
Exactly,
is actually why I
definitely.
have someone do my admin for me, is because I don't want to be the one to message you back and say, hey, I'm sorry, but you owe money.